When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
And I'm Emma. And we've both been trying for a baby for a really long time. And despite that, neither of us is currently pregnant. Guys, welcome.
Episode 9. Almost episode 10.
Yeah.
Which feels like a pivotal moment.
So today we have for you a drunken feast.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, well, great.
So we had the fantastic Hannah Vaughan Jones come in. If you don't know her, she is a CNN anchor, but she's also somebody who has spoken out about her infertility very vocally.
Yeah.
And emphatically.
Yes. And she's got a pretty brilliant IVF diary on YouTube, which mm-hmm. everyone should go and watch because it is, I mean, it's sad, it's happy, it's just a real, it's the roller coaster, isn't it? It's a good representation of what happens when you're doing IVF.
Yeah. And she's also got a really great dog.
She has a really great dog.
Yeah. Fluffy.
Yeah. Barry John.
Barry John. So we had a really good time with her. We swore quite a lot.
Yeah.
I noticed when I was doing the edit.
That's because we were drinking wine.
We were drinking wine, everyone.
Yeah. I arrived at the house and they were already there waiting for me, both drinking white wine. And I was like, this is going to be a good evening.
And it was. It was organic wine.
Just
for any nutrition fans out there.
Of course.
And then you spoke to Professor Tim.
I did. I spoke to Professor Tim Child, medical director at Oxford Fertility, about... drinking alcohol.
Hey! It's a party episode.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we found out whether or not we should have been drinking booze with Hannah Vaughan Jones or not. You'll have to wait to the end to find out.
Yeah. And other than that, guys, thank you again for all the lovely messages we've received. We have had emails from as far flung as Hong Kong.
Yeah. America.
More from Australia. So impressive.
Great.
Like I want to know who our most exotic listener is.
Yeah, let's keep going, guys. Keep them coming. Also, a lot of good feedback about the idea of doing a meetup.
Yeah, absolutely. So please, if you're interested, please let us know, give us a shout, and we will try and think of a date and a place.
Yeah, I think so.
And also London. We were thinking London because we live here.
Apologies to everyone that doesn't live in London. I know that's really annoying when everything happens in London.
Yeah, but you know,
that's where we are, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I don't travel.
you don't do you, Emma?
Except to Margate. If anyone wants to do a meetup in Margate, I'll do that too. Yeah, but other than that, please keep your really lovely reviews of the podcast coming and your ratings.
Yes,
because
they
all help other people to find it and also make us happy.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And follow us on Instagram.
Yes, you can get us at Big Fat Negative. Or on Twitter. Actually, if people could follow us on Twitter, that'd be really good. Because comparatively, our Twitter following is not as good as Instagram.
Yeah.
So that would be really helpful.
Yeah.
At Big Fat Negative.
Yeah. Facebook, Big Fat Negative.
Yep. Or you can email us, as always, at bigfatnegativepodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. So, enjoy the show.
Yeah. Speak to you soon.
Bye.
Emma, have you been?
Well, I'm actually, like, really good at the moment.
What?
I'm great.
Sorry, can you say that again?
I am awesome.
Wow.
I know. And I'll tell you for why.
Please do.
I'm on my period right now.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh. And it came on day 28 of my cycle. I had a 28-day cycle.
Is that not a perfect cycle?
It's a perfect cycle.
The perfect
one. Mate, I've been, after my ovulating around the right day triumph earlier this month, you'll remember it, I have been literally grinning from ear to ear. I have a renewed sense of vigour.
Oh, wow.
I have been smiling.
No.
Yeah?
People must think you're mad.
Yeah, but I'll caution you. Last week, there was quite a lot of spotting.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And at that point, I actually had to go off Instagram because I was having not very nice thoughts.
Okay.
So I was, basically, I had a big wobble.
Okay.
During last week, I felt very sad and very frustrated. And it's probably a bit PMT, to be honest.
Yeah. But did you know?
Yeah. The thing that is insane, right, is how much this envelops your entire life. So if you're having a bad day fertility-wise because you're, like, worried about your cycle or you're, I don't know, like, you've had a bit of spotting or whatever, suddenly you're having a bad day. Like, I had a bad day at work. Then I had one day where I was supposed to be working from home and the internet went off. And I was just like, well, it's fucking typical, isn't it? Because everything's going wrong.
The stars are aligned against me.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And then my period came. I'm just happy, mate. I'm just so happy. I have a good feeling about this month.
Oh, it's so nice to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Do you want to remind the listeners about your not so great cycles? What has the length been normally?
Yeah. I'll take you back to the very beginning.
Oh, take us right back.
Okay. Ooh, yeah. So when I went off the pill, I didn't have a period for somewhere between 60 and 90 days. At which point I started to worry a lot. Then when my period finally came, it was fairly irregular. Then it started to become more regular. And then every time I went on any kind of hormone treatment, so I've done 3 rounds of Clomid, I have done various kind of hormone tablets to, like, bring on my period, to prevent my period. I've obviously been on the pill a few times when I've been trying to do IVF rounds. And every time I do any kind of hormone treatment, so I've done one egg collection cycle and I've done one successful in that I actually managed to get around to embryo transfer cycle. And I've done one cycle where I have not transferred the embryo because it all went to crap. And I've done various, like, oh, I'm about to have an operation, so I've got to go on the pill for a few weeks just so that my period doesn't start halfway through, like, before I have a laparoscopy. I've messed with my body a lot over the last couple of years.
Your hormones have been all over the place.
3 years, actually, almost. 3 years. October, it will be 3 years that I've been TTC. But, yeah, so I've done all those things, and every time I've messed with my body, I have had a really regular cycle for, like, 3 months afterwards, which has massively delayed a lot of my treatment. And now I came off the drugs. I had a 28 day cycle straight away.
That's amazing, mate.
Thank you.
I'm really pleased for you.
Yeah, so hopefully what is now going to happen is I'm going to go for another natural cycle. If that doesn't work out, I'm going to go for a scan on day 10. And if we get to day 10 and the lining isn't looking good or my ovaries are looking a bit, I don't know what they would look like, but they're looking bad.
Frowning. Frown faces on them.
Sad ovaries.
I'm so over it.
Hey, that was great.
Thanks.
So if we get to that point, they're going to ask me to start injecting Bucerolin, which, as regular listeners will know, suppresses your ovaries, stops them from ovulating, because they think I had a breakthrough ovulation last time. Whatever.
Good.
Cool.
I'm glad you're walking on sunshine.
I am. I don't know what I'm going to do if they want me to start on the drugs again, because I think I might say no and just wait for the next month.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you've got a thing about it in your head that it doesn't react well with you.
It doesn't.
Well, then, you know, just push for a natural one.
I don't think they'll be cross.
No.
I think they'll just be like, all right.
Fair enough. Let's give it a go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you went off Instagram for a wee bit.
I went off Instagram. Yeah, because I just got a bit emotional. And then I went, and this is another interesting thing about my week. I went to a wedding on Saturday of some nice people. And we had a really nice time. But at the wedding, I met this person. And I won't go into too much detail about her because I haven't really asked her. And I only met her once. Mm. But she was nice. But suffice it to say, she'd had a bit of a terrible time. Basically, she'd been to see her GP, said, like, I think I've got something wrong with me. She hadn't been trying for a baby, but it'd just been kind of, she'd been suspecting. Mm. GP referred her to a specialist. Specialist said, yeah, I think there's something wrong with you. Wrote to her GP, said to her GP, you need to monitor this person.
Right.
And then basically, the GP kind of ignored the letter. And she's ended up, like, unable to have children.
Oh, God.
And I listened to this story and it felt so familiar to me. Mm. It reinforced to me the fact that we have to take control of our own care.
Yeah.
For me, if a specialist writes to my GP, you always get copied in on these letters. Mm. You've got to understand what they're saying.
Right.
Like, I think we really should be pushing.
Yeah, and chasing things up.
Chasing things up and just pushing to understand what we're saying. The NHS is massively overstretched. Mm. Our doctors are massively overstretched. We need to be taking control of our own care. And that means being ruthlessly organised. That means ensuring that we understand everything.
Yeah.
I go into every appointment with a list of questions that I want to ask, which I have been thinking of for maybe the week before.
Well, I made the mistake when I had my first consultation at King's of, despite loads of people telling me to write stuff down, I didn't write a single thing down. I was in there and I was like just smiling and nodding like an idiot, just like, didn't write any of it down. Left and didn't think anything of it until now. I'm like, oh, what did he say about that again? And, oh, what was that result? And it's just, if anyone out there is going for their first appointment, like, everyone says it, write everything down and do it. Like, don't let yourself think that, oh, I'll remember this, which is what I was
like. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'll retain this information.
Yeah. Didn't. You don't. Well, I mean, one thing that you can do, which I have done in the past, is just the little recording app on my phone. Oh, just hit record.
So clever. Such a journalist.
Mm, I am. You know, just record it and keep it for your own, and then you can just refer back to it.
Oh, man, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's what I should have done.
Yeah. And just make sure that you've read back on, like, the most recent letters that you've read. Make sure that you're clear on what your diagnoses are and what, you know, don't expect them to know what you're going through. You need to be able to tell them, right, I've had this, 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 and this treatment. Mm. I have been diagnosed with this, and this is what I want. And if there's something that you want, don't wait for the doctor to just be like, offering it to you. Say to them, like, I don't know, things like, I said to my doctor, do you offer an endometrial scratch? Now, there's since been studies that suggest that maybe they're not as effective as we thought they were.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some people swear by them. But it's just an example of, you know, what can I have? What can I add to this that's going to improve it? If you want a scan, right? And this is another thing. I phoned up the clinic today to try and book a scan. And the nurse was erring on the side of reluctant to book me a scan on day 10.
Really?
And I've had, in one of my previous cycles, I had the scan on day 14. Now, I wanted the scan on day 10. I was like, right, I want it on this date. Mm. This is the date I want it.
Yeah.
And she asked me all these questions, and I was like, I want it on that date. I have been told that I need to be monitored, and I want it on this date. And just, like, you're not picking a fight with these people. You are telling them, and you are being clear about what you want because it is your body.
That is some great advice.
I just got quite angry about it.
Well, fair enough, man. Fair enough. Yeah. Like, things only come up in conversation because you're monitoring them or you're aware of them.
You push. And also, you know, following on from last week or a couple of weeks ago that I said this, if your period seems weird, just tell your doctor or your nurse or whoever you're seeing. Yeah. If you think that having loads of spotting is a worry, don't wait for them to ask you. If you think that you've got black blood, still scares me,
Oh God, I've got something in our heads.
You know, just talk to them, tell them. Like, yeah. Go into, every now and then I'll go into an appointment with a nurse and I'll be like, so my cervical mucus is doing this. She hasn't asked me. No. Obviously, I apologise first because it is gross. But
well, I mean, surely that's what they...
They're supposed to ask this stuff, exactly. But they don't.
If there's anyone you can go in and talk to about your cervical mucus.
Just bring it up.
Bloody fertility nurse.
Just be like, my cervical mucus. It's
How's
green,
yours, mate.
Yeah, then ask her how hers is and see how she reacts.
Grim.
That would be amazing. And how's yours?
Oh dear.
Gabs, you all right?
Yeah, yeah. I not had a great week. Emotionally, I would suggest.
Okay.
I don't know. I think I'm just a bit fed up. You know,
the waiting.
The waiting, the lack of success.
Because where are you right now?
So I'm 2 months into 3 months of trying.
Okay.
Before speaking to the fertility clinic again.
Okay. And you've had your second period since you've been trying?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, that was while I was on holiday. Glory. Mm-hmm. Spoke about that last week, obviously.
Yeah.
And now I had a bit of a stressful day at work and it kind of spiraled, and I think it's because I'm not terribly robust emotionally anyway.
Hey, you're so robust.
Oh, I don't think I am. I think I'm a bit of a wobbly.
You're an emotional centurion.
Nah, mate, I'm a Jenga with a few missing blocks. So I'm thinking about maybe seeing someone about it. Just, I mean, also because of, you know, when we spoke to Gordon, he was like, you go to the gym all the time. Why don't you go to the mind gym?
He loved his mind gym
chat. I know. And I'm like, well, he's right. I do. I do go to the gym and I haven't taken care of my mind, potentially.
So I've had a bit of infertility counselling. And one thing they do help you with is like how to kind of understand what's happening and how to deal with what's happening to you. It doesn't make the time run any faster, but...
No. Well, I suspect, you know, there's got to be something in there about lack of control.
Yeah.
And, you know, that spills into the workplace, and then it's all of a sudden you're spiralling and you're catastrophizing about all sorts of things that are potentially completely not related. And, you know, you're just not in a good place. So I'm not as bouncy as you, mate. I'm glad one of us is bouncy this week, because it'd be bad if we both came on and we were like, oh, I hate it. Life is so crap.
I just think no matter how hard you try, this seeps into other areas of your life.
Mm.
You can't just wall yourself off. If you're having a bad time with your cycle, as I just said, you're going to have a bad day at work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's going to get shit. And if you're feeling anxious about it, that anxiety is going to manifest in other ways.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling sad about it, that sadness is going to manifest in other ways. And if you're feeling cross about it, you're probably going to lob your phone at your husband. Like, that's just what happens.
Yeah.
Sorry, John.
Well, suffice it to say, my holiday glow, the come down has been quite steep.
You still look quite tan, though, mate.
Thanks. At least I have that. So obviously last time we spoke, I chatted a little bit about my self-diagnosis.
Ah, yes, of course.
Of luteal phase disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So I got on the email and got in touch with the clinic and said, look, I've noticed this. Is it something that I should come and have a blood test about, work out if I've got progesterone problems?
Yeah. Taking control.
Taking control, exactly. Self-diagnosis.
Yes.
Dr. Gabby.
Yes.
So I'm going into the clinic to do some, I guess, further tests, or maybe just chat to the doctor. Who knows?
That's cool, though.
That is cool.
Either way, as long as it puts your mind at rest.
Well, exactly. And to be honest, I'll probably tee up maybe starting IVF.
Yeah.
Because I have no hope that this is going to work. I mean, it's silly, but I just don't think it's going to happen naturally. And I suppose I may as well get into the process.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once you're in the process, everyone has a miracle child, I heard.
It's easy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
I think that's, like, I would say 90% of IVF successes are just people shagging before their IVF. Well, that's what I hear from people who I talk to. I don't know.
Everyone's got a miracle IVF story.
Yeah, it drives me fucking mental.
It drives me mad. It's not true. Or it is true, but, like... That's like an urban myth that flies around and gives people false hope.
I just come back to them by going, well, it's not going to happen for me because I don't have any fallopian tubes. And when it's your colleague, they're a bit embarrassed.
No, shoot. Put that in your pipe and smoke.
Yeah, exactly.
I've also kind of decided I think we might go and see a urologist as well. Because...
More on which next week.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, it just makes sense to me to try and work out if, you know, if the problem is with my husband, then we should try and fix that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, if you watch this space, potentially lots of appointments coming up.
Yay!
It's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, loads of news. Oh, dear. Yeah. Other than that, I've got no news.
Okay, well, fine. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks for the update, pal.
Hey, no worries, man. Thanks for asking.
I'm going to dance off onto the horizon now.
Oh, I'm going to sulk off into onto the tube. Oh, miserable with all the miserable commuters.
See you later, mate. Bye.
Bye. Hello, everybody. Today we have the wonderful Hannah Vaughan Jones in the studio.
Hello.
Which.
Hi.
It's fantastic because she's used to a bit more of a professional studio in her role as CNN international anchor, so we're very grateful.
This is much better. This is a much better environment than what I'm used to, so I'm very grateful. Thank you. I have wine in front of me in case anyone's wondering why it's that much better.
We are drinking wine, which is probably, you know, not suggested by fertility experts, but what are you going to do? We've all had bad days, except you, Hannah.
You know, my day's been okay. I haven't been in work, so...
You've had a chilled day.
Good. Very chilled day.
It's a new addition to the podcast.
So as well as being a journalist and presenter, Hannah and her husband Lewis created a pretty powerful YouTube video blog of their last IVF cycle, which got thousands of views. Hannah went on BBC Five Live to talk about her experience and generally raise awareness of the IVF process.
Yeah, I watched them. They're amazing. If you haven't watched them, you must. They're so engaging. I ended up laughing and crying in my local coffee shop. So thank you so much for making them.
It's funny because people are still watching them, which is really interesting because it's, you know, nearly a year ago now. But I suppose it doesn't matter where you are on your, you know, journey or whatever you want to call it. It's if you've never gone through IVF before or even if you're going through it and you just need to kind of check in with just to know that you're normal.
Yeah.
I suppose it's quite useful to watch it back again.
Well, it also just gives you a really good idea of what goes on, like in a clinic. Yeah. Like, you know, and also, did you shoot the whole thing yourself? Was it just you?
No, and Lewis as well. I mean, he did most of the filming. I, you know, when it was just like selfie filming, then that's just me. Yeah. But he certainly did all of the editing. But, you know, that's just the nature of, you know, having two journalists in a house and a laptop. Yeah. You can do things like that.
I was really impressed.
It's pretty pacey as well. It's very jazzy.
Well, we're not going to do one again. I don't think we can. Well, Lewis probably can't be bothered to do all the editing again. And it was like quite a lot of pressure to keep the viewers up to date. Yeah. So even if you just wanted like a day off or you're just having a crap day and you needed to just, you know, curl up under the duvet and not speak or talk to anyone, it was suddenly like, oh no, I've got a message, I've got to put the news out there of what the latest is on my, you know, my ovaries, or you know, got to keep the give the viewers what they want.
I guess that's the kind of the pressure of social media,
yeah,
like massively.
100%.
If anything though, it was a benefit more than you know, a hindrance. Even though we didn't get the result we wanted in the end, the whole process was really cathartic, and I've said that a billion times when anyone's asked me, but it was, I mean, I just think that being able to share something that you've kept really, really private and you've almost been embarrassed about for a really long time, to suddenly put it out there and realise that other people are not only experiencing it to varying degrees, but it also helps them as well. You know, without sort of polishing my halo, it was just like a really nice kind of positive thing to do in a really, you know, negative situation.
Yeah, I think that was one of our questions, is because obviously you're both broadcasters. But was it strange talking about something so personal and narrating that rather than the news?
I'm really heart on sleeve about most things in life. So pretty much, you know, anyone could stop me in a coffee shop and ask me how I'm doing, and I'd probably take 5 minutes to explain. Lewis, on the other hand, is maybe more, I don't know, maybe this is probably a gender stereotype, but he's much more closed off. So he hadn't told all of his close friends. And I have probably comparatively a lot more friends who I would consider close friends as well. And I'd pretty much told everyone by that, by the point that we'd, you know, had said that we were going to do this, the vlog. So it was far more natural to me, and I just wanted to sort of do something that was a bit rough and ready and just show it all, kind of all angles of going through a round of treatment, whereas Lewis was far more broadcastery and professional about it and said, no, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it properly, and it's going to look good, and it's going to make sense, and it's going to, you know, reach more people. So he was completely spot on, because I probably would have just like stuck some, you know, selfie videos up on Instagram unedited, and it wouldn't have had the same impact.
Oh, it looked great. The music was great.
Yeah. Can we just like rewind right to the beginning? Tell us about your journey.
So what, as in right back to the beginning?
Yeah. Well, you know, how's it been?
It's been really long and really boring. I think that's the thing. Everyone kind of goes, oh, I've been trying to conceive for 6 years, for 2 years, for 6 months, whatever it might be. And it doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. It's just really dull, because you have the same conversation over and over again with your partner. And, you know, that's not fun. And then you have to keep explaining everything over and over again to new people, either friends who are just new to it or new people in your life. But basically, we probably started trying to have a baby about 5 years ago. And soon realised that it just wasn't, well, it wasn't happening, probably after about a year. So went to have some tests done, and they discovered that there were problems on both sides. So So sperm morphology, motility, quantity, all that kind of stuff was on the downside. Okay. And I have a heart-shaped uterus.
Oh, congratulations. Oh,
so cute.
How adorable.
I know. Yeah, I really love it. So it's called a bicornuate uterus. And so basically when everyone else has a kind of like nice, I don't know, egg-shaped, let's call it, uterus, mine is in the shape of a heart. So some people have an actual wall down the middle of their uterus to separate it into two cavities, and you need to have the wall removed, surgically removed, in order to have enough space to grow a fetus. I don't have a walled a septum down the middle, but it is still two cavities. Now, fortunately, they're kind of big in size, or good in size. So there's no reason to suggest that I couldn't carry a child. Right. But it just means that I'm at probably higher risk of late term miscarriage, or miscarriage just in general. So that sucks. And there's not really anything they can do about that. And the other extra bonus is that I have a hidden cervix. It's at 3 o'clock.
Oh,
I'm told. Yeah. I've been reliably told it's now at 3 o'clock. Right. 5 years later, after, you know, think of the number of not just transvaginal scans that we have.
Love it.
Love that. But also, you know, all the smear tests that you have through your life as well. They're kind of unpleasant, but normally not that uncomfortable for most people, whereas they're really, really uncomfortable for me. So as a result, I'm pretty sure that we realized very early on that conceiving naturally just was, I mean, the chances were so, so slim. So we went straight for IVF, and we were told quite explicitly, actually, by the nurse, our NHS nurse, that we would, you know, it's not going to happen for you anyway other than IVF, which was kind of nice to have that blunt acknowledgement, I suppose. But it was also a bit of a shock. And then we were really naive about it and thought that it would work, you know, first time. And it didn't. And we went headfirst into a billion rounds of private treatment. So we are now just about to kickstart fresh cycle number 8.
Oh, cheers.
Thanks. Yeah.
Number 8.
Lucky number 8.
It is lucky.
Is it?
Yeah. I think in China it's lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, it's lucky for someone. Ooh. It will be good. So that is a really, like, long story as short as I can get it. Mm-hmm. And there's been so many, you know, bumps and turns along the way. So we, you know, I think a lot of people who've been trying to conceive for a really long time often think, what would they do differently if they could turn back the clock? Mm. And for us, you know, 5 years on, and I don't know what it is now, probably like 70 grand down or something. Yeah. And we would know a lot more, like go into the whole process with so much more knowledge. But most of that is just because medical science is still catching up, is still really slow. Not catching up with us, but it's just slow.
Yeah.
So the things that they knew 5 years ago, or that they know now, they just didn't know 5 years ago. Mm. And so when we were going for all the first tests in private clinics, we said repeatedly, or Lewis actually said repeatedly, is there anything else that you can tell us that can help? Is there any other drug out there, any other procedure, anything else? He said it all the time to every consultant. And these are the best consultants in the country, probably the best consultants in London. And they just didn't have the answer, or they just said, nope, that's it. We've done everything we possibly can. We've thrown the kitchen sink at it. And then you go on to the next place or the next consultant, and there's always something else they can try. Yeah. So that would be what I would tell my 5 year ago self.
It's interesting because I've heard a lot of people say, a few people say, like, is the fact that we've moved on so little since 40 years ago when Louise Brown was born, is that like misogynistic? Is it because this is regarded as women's medicine and we're not really, there's no progress being made?
Well, I think they are now starting to make a bit of progress when it comes to male infertility.
Yeah.
And that they're starting to acknowledge that it's a problem and it exists. I mean, I have a relative in my family who's in her 80s now, and she was trying to conceive in the war years, 1940s and 50s, and getting nowhere. And she, you know, had all these procedures and everything like that. And there was never any question as to whether her husband might have been, the source of the problem.
Mm.
And so now she's just sort of says to me, she says, oh, God, it's bound to work for you. But it's bound to work. Medical science is amazing. I'm like, well, it's still, still not quite there in terms of acknowledging that there are problems on both sides. So I don't know. It's just slow. And actually, at the Louise Brown event at the Science Museum, I asked the professor who was there, who was sort of representing the original team of doctors who had worked with Louise Brown's parents. I said to him, it's 25% success rate, but that means obviously there's a 75% failure rate.
Yeah.
So whilst we're kind of celebrating Louise's birthday, and that's great, and there are obviously millions of babies, rather, that have been born via IVF, there's obviously a load of heartache that goes with that as well. So should we also be criticising, or at least looking critically at the processes behind the clinics that exist, and the number of clinics, and the money-making that goes on behind all of those doors that people are just completely vulnerable to, because you're playing with people's lives, you're playing with people's dreams.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so much of it, and I guess that's part of, I mean, we're really veering off topic now.
I know.
But I guess that's part of this thing about the NHS, because the NHS doesn't provide three rounds to everyone, it means that there's loads of people stepping into the breach, and the people stepping into the breach are offering all these hopes and dreams. We'll give you an endometrial scratch, which there was a study that came out that said it makes no difference.
Yeah,
don't
I've
know
had
how
four
good that was.
I was going to say, have you gone
they're
for them?
They've had four and they're hideous.
They're agonising.
They're all hideous. And everyone says, I mean, it's bearable. It's just like a 20-second hideous period.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Great.
But 20 seconds of just like wanting to like rip your own, abdomen out.
Oh, God.
And it's really, really not nice. But, at the time you do it because, it's £500 well spent.
Yeah. Are there any other things that you've kind of gone for that you were like, what if it works? Maybe we should...
We did a thing called calcium ionophore, which is before egg and sperm are put together with ICSI, because we've always done ICSI.
Yeah, we'd be doing that.
So it's supposed to help fertilization. So I think ICSI is performed, so sperm is put into egg, and then they're put in this kind of dish with this calcium ionophore mixture, and it's supposed to encourage fertilization.
Okay.
So, like me with the sperm friendly lube now as well.
Yeah.
Shoving that was about calcium seven everywhere.
750 quid or something
oh
like that.
Oh, God.
So there's just all these things. And then in the end, it was just, it didn't work. And then what else did we try? Well, there's all these doctors who will, and this is not to disparage any of these doctors, by the way, because I know that some people swear by them and think they're doing the most fantastic work when it comes to immunology. But
ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Because immunology is still a relatively new thing, I think. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are working out whether they've got natural killer cells or whether they've got cytokines coming out their ears or whatever it is. So we had a first set of blood tests done, and that was sent off to Chicago or something like that. And then everything came back relatively normal. I didn't have any weird thyroid problems or anything like that. And as a result, though, there was one test out of 15 or something like that that was ever so slightly out of the normal range. So we ended up doing the intralipids on actually on our last fresh cycle. And intralipids is basically when you have a drip. It's a fat drip.
That's nice.
You sit there for about 3 hours with a drip of 3,000 calories going into your system. Yeah, it's astonishing.
That feels against everything.
And no one told me about the calorie side, so I'm munching a sandwich all the way through this.
Going,
kill some time. So that was annoying. And then it turns out that once we, the intralipids may have worked. I was pretty convinced after I got pregnant on the last cycle that we did. I was convinced that the intralipids had maybe helped in terms of retaining the pregnancy. But then when we had a miscarriage and we had extra tests done with a different doctor who was also a specialist in immunotherapy, and he didn't want to rely on the Chicago blood tests. He wanted to run his own blood tests. So that was another £2,500.
Oh, wow.
He said, well, everything's come back normal, which is, and I said, okay, oh, well, great. At least we've kind of crossed that off the list. Mm-hmm. And he was almost disappointed because I think, in a way, had he come up with something abnormal, it would have been like, ding.
Yeah, there
something
it is. To
do. This is something we can deal with, or this is a problem. It's just not just unexplained anymore. But, he admitted as well that in 5 years' time, there'll be another 10 blood tests that they can test for, and that list will just get longer and longer, and then obviously the price will go up and up and up. And and as a result, as it turns out for us, we've spent about three and a half, actually more with intralipids, probably spent about $7,000 or $8,000 overall on immunotherapy treatment, which has made no difference whatsoever, and I probably never needed because I don't have anything that's outside of the normal range, really, when it comes to my natural killer cells.
It's a minefield, isn't it?
It's such a minefield, and that I feel so like it makes me really angry when I think about it like that, because we've kind of like done it all now, and so now we can just cherry pick the things that we can be bothered to do, but there's other people who are kind of like at an earlier stage. And, each couple is totally different. So you can't just say, well, it worked for her and for them or for him. Mm. So it's going to work for me. And so you don't really want to, I don't want to come on here and sort of say, everyone should just ignore immunotherapy. It genuinely works, I'm sure of it, for people who need it. But you've got to spend a heck of a lot of money to find out whether you need it. And, if you haven't got that money, you might just be encouraged just to have the treatment anyway, just in case it makes a difference.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the system fails people.
So we need doctors basically to say, to assess better whether people would benefit from things like that.
But they just don't know. But this is what I mean about medical science just not being fast enough yet. They're working their socks off to try and get there, but it's still a learning curve. And I just don't think they have enough research that's been done, or enough samples of worldwide of what's a success and what's not.
How did you fund your rounds? Your private rounds, I should say.
Privately, this was about, by the time we got to round five, I would say. So we did three rounds that were privately funded just through kind family members and savings. And then there's a company called Access Fertility, which is kind of like a finance company, and they have a scheme. And there may be other companies like Access Fertility, but this is the one we work with, who were really reliable, and I would just recommend them. Every clinic, or most clinics, as far as I know, will work with Access Fertility for funding. So
they're like a loan company?
Kind of. They have various packages that they offer people. So, for example, there's one which is called a refund scheme, and you have to have some kind of a medical review in order to qualify for it, which remarkably we did qualify, even though we'd done X number of rounds of treatment beforehand. But it was... it's called a refund scheme because you get three fresh rounds of treatment, and between those, each round of treatment, you have to use up any embryos you may have as well, and those would be funded as well. All those transfers would be funded. And that includes, does it include drugs? No, I think you have to pay for your medication on top of this, but it would be about, say, the last I checked, about £14,000 or £15,000 for three rounds of treatment. And if at the end of those three rounds of treatment and the use of any embryos you may have had, you don't have a baby or a live birth, as they brilliantly put it, if you don't have a live birth, you get 70% of that initial £15,000 back, which is a really odd way of looking at trying to conceive, because obviously you would happily pay anything, whatever you could possibly raise in order to have a child. But also there is something that makes you think, oh, actually, if I go through all of this hell, but I could still potentially get, you know, £9,000-£10,000 back at the end of it, at least I could put that £9,000-£10,000 towards another round of treatment or something like that, which is exactly what happened for us. And then there's another thing. If you don't qualify for under the medical review for the refund programs, there are things called multi-cycles. So I think you can get sort of something like two rounds for £10,000 or £9,000, as opposed to paying, you know, £7,000 per round or something.
Wow.
So it's worth checking out Access Fertility.
Access Fertility.
Yeah, they're great.
So what would your message be to someone who's going through this, who's being offered these kind of treatments?
If it were me, honestly, I would just do everything, because that's what I did. So my message would be, suck it up and go for it.
Just eat pot noodles.
Just eat pot noodles for a while. Eat beans. What would my message be? I suppose it would just be, do as much research as you possibly can. You don't need to become, you know, a fertility expert, although you'll feel like one at the end of it all. But there are, all of these medical reviews and reports are available online. You can look them all up. The HFEA, which is the Human Fertilization Watchdog.
Embryology Authority.
Well done.
Yeah. Well done. Mark's gold star for Emma.
You'll get a free round for that. No, I mean, but no, I'm sure that their website, I haven't looked on it for a long time, to be honest, but I know that they are a really good watchdog, and they are trying to clamp down on clinics that are kind of, you know, cowboy clinics or whatever. And so they have, at the moment, I think the rules changed this year at least, whereby all clinics now have to at least offer their patients recent results. So instead of just saying you need an endometrial scratch, instead of just saying do this ionophore, calcium ionophore, whatever it is, mixture, instead of intralipids, they'll tell you what the success or other rates are, and then you can judge for yourself. So I think it is starting to get better.
I was fascinated watching the YouTube series that you, just going back to work and absolutely smashing it. Like, you're so professional at a time that must have been quite difficult. Like, how do you do it?
I think it's because, you know, my job is to present, and part of that is acting. And I've always loved a spotlight, loved being on stage and loved acting. And so I think for a lot of other people, they go into work after going through maybe kind of like a miscarriage or something hideous when it comes to trying to conceive. And they sit at their desk and they feel like all eyes are on them. And it's a really uncomfortable, just sink into yourself, vulnerable feeling. Whereas instead, even though it sounds really kind of perverse because I'm going onto a kind of international stage in a sense, it was like I got to escape from me for a bit and go and just be a better version of myself or the person I want to be. Like today, I'm going to be Hannah Vaughan Jones, international broadcaster.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not going to be Hannah Vaughan Jones, basket case, who can't put one foot in front of the other and just cries all the time. You know, it's just, it was a really, really easy, and I wanted to do it. I wanted to work as much as possible around, whereas other people don't, in the kind of the two-week wait and things like that. I was like, oh my God, I need to just escape my head as much as possible.
Is that partly down to the fact that you really love your job?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I do love my job, and it's always changing. There's no kind of, it's never monotonous. It's just, you know, yes. So I'm lucky in that sense again. But I think everyone just has to make a choice as well. There are certain things you can control in life and there are certain things you can't. You can't control so much when you're going through IVF. It's just stripped from you. But things you can control are things like your attitude when you wake up in the morning. Like, am I going to feel sorry for myself all day? If I choose to, that's fine. If I'm not at work, that's totally fine. I can just sit in my pajamas and eat ice cream and that's no problem. But you can also go, I'm going to set myself a challenge. I'm going to go to the gym because it makes me feel better. I'm going to go for a run. I'm going to take the dog for a walk. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to, you know, go and have coffee with a friend. I'm going to go and have that like extra strong latte because I haven't had caffeine in 3 weeks and I'm just desperate to just, you know, nail it now. You know, there are things that you can choose to do to have a positive impact, even if it's not an impact on anyone else's life, but just to kind of put one foot in front of the other. And work has just been the biggest relief for both of us, actually, I think, for Lewis as well, because it's, you know, you often forget the guy.
I have that a little bit. Like, I do find myself kind of escaping to work and just...
Yeah, Donald Trump starts talking and I am not thinking about my uterus, even if he is.
I suppose it stops it defining you as well and being the thing that you do and the thing that you are, if you are someone else and yourself at the same time.
Yeah. It's weird though for social media reasons, because I'm kind of on Twitter. Twitter for me is mostly work stuff. And Instagram has been kind of like the home of fertility and infertility and that sort of stuff. So and also my sort of and my private life, which I suppose of course is fertility stuff as well. So it's difficult to kind of like separate the two, because I might put something work related on Instagram and then I'm like, oh, hang on a minute, this is a load of like hormonal women who are going to be watching this. They don't care about what's going on in India right now. But, you know, I'm just sort of mixing it up a bit.
Talking about your Instagram, can you talk to us a little bit about Barry John, please?
Oh, I love that bear so much.
Why is he called Barry John?
Wait,
we should say, who is Barry John?
Yeah, sorry.
Barry John lives in Cardiff. And he is, or was, the greatest rugby player of all time in the 1970s.
Wow.
For Wales and the Lions. And my husband, when we agreed that when he finally conceded to let me have a dog, he said, we can only get a dog if I can name it. So he named it Barry John.
That's a great name.
And if it had been a bitch, it probably would have been Shirley Bassey.
Oh, wow.
So, of course.
Yeah. So Barry Welsh John massive. Has actually met Barry John.
No.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great meeting. I think Barry John human was a little disappointed that Barry John canine is a, you know, fluffy white little bear.
A muscular bulldog.
Yeah, it wasn't quite the image that he conjured up in his head beforehand. But yeah, he's amazing. And I think lots of people said to me, oh, you know, you're just getting a dog to make up the fact that you don't have a baby. And I was like, yeah. And I'm fully aware of it. And it makes me feel really good. And he's absolutely gorgeous. He's a nightmare. And Lewis will always say, I can't believe we have this dog that's ruining our lives. But I love him to pieces. And the best thing that I've done. And people get cats or dogs or whatever it is, get a parrot, whatever, just someone to kind of offload on when you don't want to talk to a human, because sometimes humans are really judgmental and dogs never are. He's also really unfortunate because when we first got him, I didn't realise that Barry John was going to be shortened to BJ. So when you go into a park and yell, BJ, come.
That's amazing.
That's really awkward. Now it just goes straight over my head and I'm like, whatever. It doesn't bother me anymore. Fortunately, everyone else in Twickenham, where we live, who walks their dogs, they all know him because he's quite a character. So it's just completely passed them by as well. That
it's amazing.
It's unfortunate abbreviated name.
That's brilliant.
So I guess he gets you out and about when you're if you're having a day where you're like, I don't want to see anyone.
Yeah, he's just amazing. And I just think it's a really good thing to do. I'm not saying to everyone, like, go out there and get it, you know, a dog, a horse or whatever. Mm-hmm. But just being active. I mean, it sounds really obvious, even if you're not a particularly sporty person. But I always found that through the last 5 years, because I've always been relatively sporty, I needed to have other goals outside of IVF. So a lot of people would say that's a challenge enough in and of itself. So, you know, that should be all your focus should be on that. Whereas my approach was kind of like, well, that's one challenge. But whilst I'm at it, I'm going to set myself another challenge as well. And that might be getting a dog and, you know, walking him 5 miles a day or whatever it is. Or, I mean, I did a half marathon earlier in the summer because I just thought, I need to train for something. I need to kind of like, it doesn't matter how long it takes me to finish it.
Yeah.
But I need to cross a finish line.
Yeah.
Knowing that I need to start a race knowing that I can cross the finish line, basically. Because I think I've just been running through the IVF thing for so long and never actually getting my medal at the end. And I was like, I want the medal in a t-shirt, you know?
That's a really nice analogy. One. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
God, I really need to stop doing 2 miles and start doing more than
But that was
miles.
My problem. I was always doing, I would do, my. There's a nice little circuit from my house, from my front door, and it's 2 miles exactly. So I would just be like, oh, I don't want to go for a run. And you eventually, like, you know, get yourself out the door and plod along
at
the slowest pace ever. Yeah. And it's just like a glorified walk. And then do your 2 miles and pat yourself on the back. And it's made no difference whatsoever to your, like, level of fitness or to any kind of calorie count that you may be on. Yeah. Nothing like that. But, at least it gets the old endorphins going.
Well, that's what I think. I have started running and my cycle has instantly become... Well, it might be a coincidence, but my cycle has instantly become more regular.
Oh, that's good.
Because over the summer I was really crap at exercise. It was too hot.
Yeah, I'm not very good at running in the heat either.
Yeah, and I think because I was doing a drug-based round... frozen embryo transfer, I was like, the drug's all sorted, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And now... I'm trying again for a natural frozen embryo transfer. Okay. So I've got to sort my hormones out.
So all the drugs you were talking in the last one about, was it Progynova and estradiol and patches and all of that? So I've done all of that. How's it going?
I mean, I had a really bad... Like, I actually... Last time I did it, I didn't react so badly. So I remember the day before my embryo transfer, I did my first ever 5K.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
My last ever 5K as well. But just for myself, because I just decided if I'm ever going to run that far, like, today is going to be it. Yeah. And then with this round, I wasn't exercising because it was hot. It was just too hot.
It was too hot.
It was like 30 degrees.
I ran here to do a record once, and I was so red in the face by the time I arrived. I think I had to take at least a half an hour break.
Think in the heat, I'll go swimming instead because I love swimming. But then if you're doing any kind of IVF, they always, especially if you're in the 2 week wait, I'll never forget my first 2 week wait. And a nurse turned around to me and they give you a kind of like, you know, a sheet of paper and say, this is your test day. This is actually if you do it in a private clinic. Mm-hmm. I think on the NHS, you just go away and you just pee on a stick yourself,
don't
you?
Yeah, it's awful.
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 And if you're in a private clinic, more often than not, they test you. You do a blood test to find out if you're pregnant. And then so they give you a sheet of paper and they said, right, okay, so there are a couple of rules for the next 10 days or 2 weeks. No laptops on laps, no dogs on laps, no swimming, obviously no alcohol and no weird foods that you haven't had before.
Yeah.
But I was like, sorry, I'm putting my dog on my lap.
Yeah.
I don't have a choice on that, I'm afraid.
That?
No swimming. But in case there's some sort of infection lurking around in the pool. And, you know, if you're about to go on holiday or something like that, I think at one point we had 1 2-week wait when I was just about to go to France or something like that on holiday. And you think, oh, great, I'm going to have to sit in 38 degrees.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of ruins my IVF in Greece plan.
Oh, yeah, it does. It really does. You're right.
My 2-week wait just boiling.
The thing is that if you go to the NHS, you're like, is there anything that I should or shouldn't be doing? And they're like, well, don't get really, 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 really drunk.
Yeah, great.
And don't do
great.
Any drugs.
Ah, good one. And that's, no hot yoga as well.
Yeah, don't lift anything. Don't lift anything too heavy.
Yes.
And that's all they said to me. And I was like, okay. Soft cheeses? They're like... It's just so weird. They almost don't want to recommend anything in the NHS.
But it all boils down to the fact that they don't know.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. I mean, you think about it, people who are conceiving naturally, left, right and centre, and they're most of the time, I don't know, probably getting drunk.
Yeah.
Almost
yeah.
Certainly.
Like, my best friend exclusively conceives when she's drunk. Sorry, Soph.
But, you know, you might be on holiday, so you're just knocking back the wine or the cheese and all of that sort of stuff, and you're in the sunshine, so you're probably too, you know, a lot of heat, mm-hmm. you're in water, there's contamination left, right and centre, and you're still able to conceive. And so I think they just say it because they're trying to sort of like sanitise the environment as much as possible. But you end up becoming, as you'll both know, just a complete fruit loop for 2 weeks. And my last 2 week wait, I was just I can't even remember if it was the last one. There's been too many. It's been like a year of my life, 2 week waits. but I just thought I'm not caving into it at this time. So whilst I would definitely cut back on coffee, I wouldn't have any caffeine in a 2 week wait, for example, after I've done an embryo transfer, but I still have like a coffee a day,
that's fine
now or something like that. And I just, all of the other rules and things like that, I just think it's nonsense.
You, for 2 week wait, you tend to go to work.
Yes.
If you were going to give someone advice,
I'd just be
would
busy.
That be part of it?
Yeah. Be busy.
Yeah.
I mean, if your job is very stressful and you know that that 2 week period when you're supposed to be kind of taking it easy, which is of course good advice to take it easy, then, you know, maybe take some time off work if you know you're going to be running around like a blue ass fly and just kind of going, you know, and very stressed and have a big project on, then maybe that's the time to go, do you know what? I need to take that time off.
I mean, you do present the news.
I know.
It's not chilled.
But I don't, it's quite stressful, but I've done it for so long now that I suppose it's been like 15 years of being in those environments. I've always been in 24-hour newsrooms internationally. So it was in Moscow and then London. And so I've always been in those really kind of like hard environments
where
you
normal.
Have. Yeah. So I have hour deadlines normally, or 10-minute deadlines. Or it's just suddenly like, can you just ad lib about Putin for a bit? I'm like, yeah, sure, that's fine. Because it's just kind of like acting and improv.
Yeah. I mean, on the work front, I just want to tell everyone that's listening that Hannah has probably the best hair of anyone I've ever met, IRL.
Oh, that's a good story with this, actually, though.
Okay.
So my hair...
is so great.
Thanks. It's so thick. It is really thick, which, again, makes me very lucky. But... in my last fresh cycle of treatment, I don't know which drugs it was, but there's a patch of hair at the back of my head, basically where I lie on the, because I lie in a kind of like mummified, I sleep in a mummified position.
Okay.
And I think it was just where my head was on the pillow, but my hair became like straw and it got worse and worse and worse as I was doing the stimulation drugs. And all of the makeup artists at work were just like, this is just getting like, we can't manage this anymore. There's only so much. Thankfully, it's the back of my head, so you couldn't see it so much. But yeah, my crowning glory was
oh, God,
disappearing. And there
How
was nothing.
Dare you, IVF.
I know, exactly. It sucks. And I found out that actually avocado oil is the
really?
Solution. Yes.
Oh, there you go, guys.
So top tip, if you're kind of doing IVF and you feel like your skin's really dry or your nails are cracking and just everything feels a bit gross because you just generally obviously feel gross, avocado, or eat avocado and then just stick it on your head.
Really? Mm. Okay, doing that. My hair's disgusting. But what I was going to say is you've got really great hair. Like, you dress immaculately, especially when you're on TV. Does that help you preserve your kind of strength?
Yeah.
And keep your front up?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I really believe in power dressing, and I don't mean in a kind of like 80s power suits, but you know, Kat Strawbridge at Trying Years is a great proponent of this, because she's a stylist herself, and she will work with people to just to dress to empower themselves. Mm-hmm. And I've had so much kind of styling over the years through various jobs that I've had, and so you work out what makes you feel good. And even though I'm bigger than the average female presenter, and I'm much broader as well, but I always end up wearing kind of very like pencil skirts and quite figure hugging tops and dresses and the like, just because I know that I need to just convince myself that I need to get my posture right, suck everything in, otherwise it's going to look terrible. So it's block colours, no pattern, very minimal, never any necklaces, bold statement earrings, and normally a bright red lip.
I love it. I find it very inspiring.
I think you have to dress to make yourself feel good. And, you know, obviously, if I've just been injecting goodness knows what in my tummy for however long, mm-hmm. then I'm not going to be wearing a kind of like a figure-hugging dress. I'm more likely to be seen in a very flouncy, well, not flouncy, but a loose-fitting shirt or something like that. But it's always block colour, and it's always something that's quite punchy, just because I think if you have something that pops out of you, then you're more likely to be quite poppy and upbeat. And then it just gets the energy going.
I like it. That's cool. Well, Hannah, I feel like we could literally keep going all night. Or all... or whatever time people are listening to.
At least until another two bottles have gone.
My God, yeah. But, one of the questions that we had was around the kind of coverage of IVF, because your piece in The Times that appeared in October last year.
Yes.
And that's October 2017, for those listening in the future, was very confessional, but I felt like it was one of the first or earliest examples of that kind of very honest writing about infertility. Like, I think you started with, I might never be a mum.
Yeah, it was something that I wrote after we'd had a frozen embryo transfer that had failed.
Yeah.
And we just had the phone call from the clinic that day. And I sat down in the evening with a laptop, and I said to turn to Lewis and said that I'm just going to write this down. I just need to get it off my chest.
Yeah.
And it took 10 minutes. And I just wrote the whole thing out, and it was exactly what I wanted to say. If I was talking to a stranger or to my best friend, it was exactly what how I felt at that moment and what I wanted to say. And I was fed up. I was sick and tired of being quiet about it, because we had up to that point pretty much kept everything, whilst our close friends knew.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't common knowledge at our work, for example, or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful feeling. I wrote it. I handed it to Lewis to read, and he's my biggest fan and biggest critic, and he read it and just said it's brilliant, and I was about to just upload it onto Facebook just as like one big chunk, and he said no, you need to send this to an editor and get it published. This needs to go to a bigger audience, which is really brave actually of him, because A, it wasn't his words, and yet it was his story. We'd never talked, especially from him. He just had never talked about it in such a public way. So it kind of spiraled from there. And now I think everyone's writing stuff. I've since written loads and loads of words in a similar kind of vein of just going, oh, I'm just going to sit down. Yeah. It will feel really good. I know lots of people keep like an IVF diary and things like that, which I think is a great idea. I've written probably about 30,000 words of something. I don't know what it is. But now it doesn't even feel relevant to as something that I could publish, because everyone else is doing stuff that's reads so much better.
Oh, I'm sure that's not true.
I may have kickstarted this kind of like honesty thing, but now it just like, oh no, that was brilliant. I could never put it like that. And also it's out of date, like how I felt and how the industry, if you can call it an industry, the industry was a year ago, mm-hmm. is really different to how it is now. Mm. So a lot of the things that I was writing, you know, that I've written over the last year and how I felt as well, are just either inaccurate and just not relevant anymore. A lot of the emotional stuff as well. I mean, honestly, if you write stuff down when you're at your most hormonal, it's frightening when you read it back.
Oh, yeah. I did poetry once.
Did you? Yeah, that's a good
Then
one.
I read it back and was like, delete.
But it's amazing how you feel afterwards. It does help. It does help. In my darkest hours, I've written it down and it just instantly clears something out of the system.
My sister-in-law's in publishing and she's a brilliant editor and I love her to pieces, and she's read a lot of the stuff that I've written. And just to, I wanted to get a kind of like a, you know, a good perspective of where I was going with this, and did she think any of it was any good? And she was very sweet, and she said, you know, no, it's good, it's good. She said, a couple of things we need to delete. And it was some of the bits that where I'd been like a complete psychopath. So I put this sort of disclaimer at the beginning of just like, by the way, a lot of this has been written when I'm nuts. And then you read it back and you go, oh, wow, that's angry. That's really angry. Mm. Kind of like when you see a sign of like a baby on board on the back of a car. And you think, that's just bragging. That's just bragging.
All right, no need to rub it in.
Exactly. It's like as if anyone's going to drive any faster, you know, if you didn't have a baby on board around you.
Yeah.
And I just thought, it's just unnecessary bragging. But now I kind of go, well, yeah, of course, you know, actually, if I'm a driver and I see a baby on board, I'm probably not going to go and like, you know, go right up close to them. I probably am going to keep my distance for many reasons.
I think it depends at what point in the cycle I am.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I might nudge their bumper in a bad place. Anyway, Hannah, look, it's been so great to have you, and thank you so much for coming in. It's been very cathartic.
Good, good. Thanks for the wine.
That's all right.
Cheers.
Cheers. Shall we cheers? Yeah.
And now it's time for
Old Wives' Tales.
Fact or fiction?
You have been speaking to Professor Tim Child about the subject of
booze. Boozy booze.
So I go through a booze cycle comes to TTC.
Yeah.
I go through the I am not drinking, then I go through the one's all right.
Yeah.
And then I get to I'm drinking all the drinks.
Well, yours are different cycles, aren't you? Because you're doing IVF, so it's not the monthly alcohol, no alcohol cycle that many others do when they're TTC.
So when I was stimming, trying to produce as many eggs as possible, I did not drink for like 3 months.
Right.
I didn't lose as much weight as I wanted to lose, I'll be honest.
How was the bank balance? That's the other thing.
Oh, bank balance was good because I didn't go out or see anyone or socialise.
Yeah,
but that's my Netflix balance, poor. Ooh. But then when I've been doing transfer cycles, I have been allowing myself the odd glass.
Yeah. I think that's okay, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know whether to give up or not. I'm kind of in this weird place where I'm like, I am serious about this, so maybe I should stop drinking.
Yeah, but what if you never get pregnant?
I know, and then I've denied myself all that delicious wine.
And you've had no fun.
Oh, God.
Although booze doesn't necessarily equal fun, so...
Yeah, so in order to put this to rest, finally, I thought we'd ask Professor Tim about it and see what he had to say.
Great. Take it away, Professor Tim.
So it's a difficult one, this one. In general, my view would be a small bit of what keeps you happy is absolutely fine, and clearly there's been many children conceived following alcohol. Studies are somewhat conflicting, so some studies have suggested that it's best to avoid alcohol altogether. But I think overall, I think small amounts of alcohol, just being sensible about it, would be absolutely fine.
Right. And is that for people who are both trying to conceive naturally and going through the IVF process?
Yes, that would be my view. I think that, again, the evidence is not really there that just small amounts of alcohol cause problems either conceiving naturally or during IVF. And so I think just being reasonable about things. I think binge drinking, probably not a great idea, but small sensible amounts, if that helps people relax, helps them cope with fertility issues or helps them cope when going through IVF, then I'd see that as a positive thing.
Brilliant. Well, that makes me feel a little bit better. Thanks, Professor Tim. Right, well,
that is a wrap.
That is a wrap.
It's a wrap.
A wrap on episode 8.
Okay. Well, guys, what?
It's episode 9.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, made a boo-boo. Oh. Made a little boo-boo.
I'm not going to re-record this.
Episode 9, of course, and I knew that all along.
Guys, I hope your week is as productive as Gabby's is about to be.
See you guys.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.